This is Adam Shartoff, and you're listening to FilmWax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. Hello, everybody. This is Adam Shartoff. Welcome to FilmWax Radio number 238. I am kind of speaking low and sexy because I am in a public space. I'm in Toronto at the festival, but upstairs in a bar restaurant where they're doing lots of interviews with different filmmakers and folks from films here at TIFF. And at the same time, I'm kind of stressed out because my MacBook's video card is kind of dying on me. It's fried up. At the moment, it's behaving, but and I know that it's not going to. So I'm hoping that if you're hearing this, it's because I was able to edit a show together for my friends that are on this episode of the podcast. And they are Matthew Bonifacio and his partner in life and in work, at least for this film, which is called The Quitter. Her name is Juliana Galinas Bonifacio. And she produced and acts in this movie, and he directed and acts in this movie. And it's a very entertaining film. It is playing in Midtown Manhattan at the moment. It's the Regal Ewok. I forget how many theaters are in that screen, but go check it out. It's a lovely film, and you'll be doing me a solid and Matthew and Juliana a solid. I'm going to keep this kind of short because I'm about to interview another filmmaker shortly, and I'm trying to get work done. And normally I would love to talk your ear off, as you well know, but we're going to keep this short. I am up in Toronto. I'm lining up a number of great interviews. It's been a great, productive visit, and I'll catch you all up first chance in my next dispatch here. But what can I tell you? It's been a great time here. The weather's been terrific. I just walked out of the David Gordon Green movie starring Al Pacino. It's called Manglehorn, also starring Holly Hunter. It's a terrific film. I mean, I enjoyed it. It's going to be a jagged pill, but for people. But obviously, he knows that going into it when he made the movie. Anyway, what else? I saw the new Kevin Smith movie, Tusk, which was really disturbing and really fun. And a couple of other films. I'm about to interview this documentary filmmaker, David Thorpe, who made a documentary called Do I Sound Gay? And so that'll be also coming up. I've been doing some work with another podcast, one called The Daily Buzz. And so we'll be putting those interviews up in the next few days as well. And hopefully I'll have a computer that works. But right now I'm dealing with something, I guess, that everybody has to deal with when they run around with a computer and burn the screen too brightly and watch too much video on their computer. And so the video card is dying on me. But in the meantime, folks, thanks for listening. This is Matthew. He made and Juliana, but Matthew made a couple of films which I've seen. I met him years ago at the Tribeca Film Festival when his movie Mexicano premiered. Then we kind of kept in touch, and one of my first episodes of Film Wax Radio was with Carmine Famiglietti. I might be butchering his name now that I think about it, but Carmine was one of my first guests. He acted in a Mexicano and again in Pounds, and now Matthew has a new film with his wife again, Juliana, called The Quitter. And so we're going to talk to Matthew and Juliana right now. Thanks for listening. We'll be back afterwards. This is kind of pretty neat because I'm talking to those people out there listening now.
Hello.
Which is
hello.
Kind of an odd thing to do. But yes, the other voice you just heard was Matthew Bonifacio. And Matthew and I have been friends for probably about 7 years.
Absolutely. From the Rabbi Report days.
That's right. Which I don't know if you can find those articles anymore, maybe, but the first year I went to Tribeca Film Festival was under the right writing some reviews for mm-hmm. Mark Rabinowitz. And I think Mexicano, which was your film in the Tribeca Film Festival,
yes,
that year, was maybe the first screening I went into. In my memory, that's the way the myth, that's how I think about it, that it was like the first screening I went into. And and we went to see that, a Mexicano, and then went to a party And that's when I met you. And
that's right.
Yeah. I met you and I met Carmine. And Carmine, as a footnote also, getting all this old history done, but Carmine was maybe the second or third guest on this podcast.
If you go
back to like episode 2 or 3,
that's right.
Carmine, I think maybe the third guest. Yeah.
And we
Carmine.
Had a
I invited you both.
Right. I think I was in California.
Pounds was about to have some sort of premiere, or whether it was a theatrical premiere, or it was going to be a screen somewhere, or maybe the DVD was coming out. I don't remember which. But that's right. And then you couldn't make it.
Yeah. And then you also hosted a screening of Pounds.
First edit necessary right there. We're
okay.
Not talking about that. That was a...
off the record.
No. That was, yes, all the best intentions, you know, kind of thing. That was a difficult thing. I was trying to build a series up in an auditorium in a school, and those are the worst places, it turns out, because acoustics are pretty terrible anyway. And then when you have an empty, sorry to say, empty-ish auditorium, the acoustics are even that much worse. You know, it's just awful. So that's one thing. And then, of course, there's just it's embarrassing, and it's, you know, it's just you feel terrible when you just can't get people to come in and see a movie, and then you have the people there from the movie. It's nothing worse.
We were just excited to be associated with you, to be honest.
Well, I had the same. I felt
you have great taste.
Well, thank you. Well, I you know, I'm not going to play something I don't think people are going to like, and I did think that was a subject matter, Pounds, that people would really enjoy, you know, watching. It was an amazing story behind that movie. Not only the story in the movie of the movie, but I mean, story that the movie is, but also behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Yeah, the making of it. So, I've already taken way too long to also welcome Juliana Galinas Bonifacio. Right? Do you go by just your birth name, or do you now take on the good face?
I think Juliana the wife goes by Juliana Bonifacio.
Oh yeah. What about the actor?
The actor, and for this movie in particular, I am using both names without a hyphen.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing against the hyphen. That's just what I'm doing.
Right.
And part of that is when we were watching the temp open credits. Matthew's name, then my name come up, and I'm like, do you think anyone's going to watch the movie thinking the entire time that we may be brother and sister?
We kind of look like each other, don't we?
So, just
well,
to
you
avoid...
Well, you know, now that you mention it...
look like each other?
I think that's not... No, I think pets.
Pets, okay.
Do you have pet names? No.
No.
Well, there's a scene about... two-thirds of the way through the movie, if not just past the halfway mark, where you lunge for Juliana's character, or you make a pass at her, finally. So that would put, hopefully, this idea that you might be siblings behind you. You won't have to worry about that if you had used.
True.
You know?
That's true.
So, yeah. Well, the name of the film we've been referring to is called The Quitter. And it's a brand new movie, and it's coming out just to get the housekeeping out of the way. Friday, the 12th of September, correct?
Yes.
Where in New York is it screening, Juliana?
It is coming out at the Regal Ewok Cinemas in Times Square.
Do they call it that because the Ewoks run through the aisles, like, you know, like attacking people and stuff like that? Ewoks?
They're just the mascot.
Okay. Is it really called the Ewok? What is the...
Yes, it is.
What kind of... Even if there is such a thing as an Ewok, why would you use that in the name of your theater, for God's sake? Do you know what
maybe because you'll never forget it.
As hard as you may try. But it will be at least one good movie starting next Friday. The Quitter was such a pleasure to see. Thank you for hooking me up with that. And
thank you for watching.
Oh, yeah. Of course. You know, this is an ongoing thing. Okay, guys, so one of you will tell... Juliana, you'll do it. Tell me, give me a little synopsis of the film. It's a narrative film. It's a romantic... It's a couple of things. It's a romantic dramedy. I hate the expression, but it does apply. And it's also a love story. It's a love story not only between the two of your characters, but also between Matthew's character, Jonathan, and Destiny's character, Luca.
Yes, that's true.
Now, you don't need to do the synopsis.
You don't. That you did a really good job. There's not much more to say.
No, but now do a little bit of more of it. It's a Brooklyn story.
Yeah, it's a Brooklyn story, but hopefully not a Brooklyn story that people have seen before, particularly referring to the Brooklyn part of it. It's filmed in a lot of parts of Brooklyn that I'm sure Matthew can add to that haven't been used as much before in films, especially since setting films in Brooklyn has become so popular. We wanted to avoid that, even though right. Matthew's born and raised here and feels very comfortable here, and we live here in Brooklyn. We didn't want to make a film that was trendy Brooklyn, I guess. We just wanted to make a film about people who live in this borough.
Yeah, you don't find, there's no hipsters in this movie.
No, well, that's not true.
Oh, no, yes. There's very much hipsters. No, you're right. The neighbors are complete and utter archetypal hipsters. And they're very well, they're very, very funny and very well played. And they do have a hipster party, which during in the movie, too. And your character, Georgie, is a single mother who has recently moved back out of financial
necessity.
Necessity is a good word for it. Back to Brooklyn, where she has some ghosts, I guess you could say, right? And how was it playing a single mother with a kind of like, you know, you have a little bit of a little anger about your circumstances.
A grudge.
A grudge. Yeah. You're sitting on some stuff. And then you run into a Jonathan. Or Jonathan runs into you, and all of a sudden it complicates your world.
Yeah. It's not completely spelled out in the film, because it's not so much about the backstory.
Right.
How I guess, envisioned the backstory going is Georgie and Luca have been living in Florida with her parents and had a job there and was supporting her and her daughter. And I think that a lot of that anger and resentment that she initially had when Jonathan left before Luca was born, I think it subsided quite a bit being away from Brooklyn. But when she lost the job and wanted to remain independent and was offered a job by her uncle in his tile store, we couldn't think of a more boring location where tile store came from. I think it was an opportunity for Georgie, but she wasn't foolish enough to think that this might not happen, that she might not run into Jonathan, who we find out is the father of Luca and has never met her right. before. So I think that a lot of that anger that probably had subsided for several years comes back threefold when she runs into Jonathan.
Yeah. And then
I like the tile shop.
Me too.
I love the shapes of the tiles. That's why there's some wide shots in the middle of the scene when we pop out.
Okay. And you know, you learn to love a tile shop when you need to tile a room. All of a sudden you're like, this is, you know, there's a scene, a very memorable scene in Mr. Blandings Builds His Dream House, and I recommend it, but where it's the eggshell blue, you know, the robin's egg blue, and you know, it kind of makes fun of this like 50 years ago. But people do get crazy about tiles when they have the back splash to do, or their bathroom needs a redo. All of a sudden, you're like spending hours in a
huge
tile
business.
Store. Yeah. Matthew, you play Jonathan, who is a quitter. You've quit, you know, a lot of stuff. And I really like, though, you've set up a couple of interesting subplots. And referring to something that, Juliana, you said a few minutes ago, where there's not a lot of focus on explaining the backstory. It's just there, you know? Mm-hmm. And you're both kind of carrying around baggage from that, especially you. You got a kid, Juliana. Your character, Georgie, has a kid, so you don't have as much time to kind of dwell in that, but you're kind of dwelling in kind of in a certain amount of disappointment.
Yeah.
And, like a baseball career that didn't go where you wanted it to go. Relationships with your father, which is disappointing. And, obviously your relationship with Georgie didn't go right. And you're kind of in that malaise when we meet you.
Yeah, I mean, we kept a lot of things ambiguous on purpose. And the screenplay was written by Bill Gullo, who we commissioned. And it was inspired by an idea I had many years ago when I started to envision this story as a play. Basically, a failed baseball player who had gotten his ex-girlfriend pregnant. He bolts for a baseball career that goes nowhere. And then it's years later, and he runs into her and his daughter, and he wants to get in their life. He has an epiphany, and he wants to do right. But, you know, one thing we all made a conscious effort was to let the audience fill in the blanks. And hopefully the subtext with Jonathan, the subtext with Georgie, and the other characters' relationships could come to the surface and fill in the blanks, like why Jonathan was a quitter. You know, maybe Georgie's character quit ballet. She has that moment at the ballet bar, what's happening there. You know, we didn't want to spell out things and kind of let the audience piece things together.
Yeah, it shows a certain amount of confidence in your audience, too, which is nice. And I think as an audience member, we appreciate it.
Oh, well, you know, in all the years I've been doing the filmmaking now, I just respect audiences more and more. They are very sharp and smart. So with this particular film, just really wanted to trust our choices and instincts, and the audiences will pick up on the details, hopefully. Did I answer the question?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I also think I don't know. Do you have a casting person that you work with?
Yes, we had a casting director by the name of Gail Keller, who has worked on The Louis Show.
I don't know.
And yeah, I never heard of it either. And she brought in some
Louis,
great...
You mean the heavy guy who does the game shows now?
Yeah, I think he's following one person on Twitter, but has like a gazillion followers.
Yeah.
No, he's great. And she made a lot of introductions, brought in talent. We cast the hipsters through her, Henry Vick and Aaron Dark.
Right, your wacky neighbors.
Yeah, they
always
were a lot
a great
of fun.
Trope.
Hmm?
Always a great trope.
Yep.
To use in a movie is wacky neighbors.
Absolutely,
we never get tired of that.
We met Deidre O'Connell.
She's your mom.
Yeah, and she's wonderful.
I just want to say though that I've been seeing now one after another one of your lousy movies for going back 7-8 years. No,
they're
but
the worst.
From Ex-Cono to Pounds to through The Quitter. This casting is always so good, and
thank you.
You know, you surround yourself because you are from an Italian American. but because you're Italian American, though, you know, you're writing personal films. Mm-hmm. There's always the parents and extended family members, and what I found is always how great your casting is and how great the actors are, and. You know, frankly, even though those are great entertaining movies and TV shows we're used to seeing a lot of American character actors in, what I love about these are so much more honestly the kinds of people we really know, and they're not following certain cliches we've been seeing.
Mm-hmm.
Again, in some of the best movies and TV shows, so it's not like I'm complaining, but it is a nice contrast.
That means a lot. I personally take a lot of pride in the casting process, whether we're working with a casting director or it's through my own network or referrals. And as a former actor, I guess I'm not a former actor right now. Since I'm out of retirement actor, it's important. Obviously, the story's king, but then you need actors to execute it and bring the story to life thank you for your observation.
Talk about these specific actors, because I will say the actor that plays Uncle Richard and both your parents in particular, and I know there were maybe a couple of others, but those three actors I always feel this way when I see your movies, that I want to meet all the actors, mm-hmm. and I want to get to know them because they just seem so salt of the earth and loving. You know what I mean? And flawed, but just amazing. I don't know. And I had, again, the same experience with Acquitter. Great, great actors.
Yeah, Jack O'Connell was also through Gail Keller. Dan Grimaldi, you knew him.
Yeah, many years ago.
Does he play your dad?
Yeah.
So that was a direct connection from Matthew.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Dan Grimaldi was on The Sopranos for many years.
Right.
And
just
played the two twin brothers.
Patsy.
And I didn't really watch the show.
I wonder if he got two salaries.
Oh, maybe.
We'll have to ask him.
But Dan I know a long time. And, yeah. And a mutual friend reunited us. And
And you have a very kind of strained relationship with him. He's, you know, constantly been disappointed by you. And so my question is, what is it that he's doing with those CDs? Is he labeling? What is he doing? He's every time we see him in a scene, he's at the table, mm-hmm. in the dining room, marking up CDs.
He has a jar of peanut butter, and this was in Bill's script. It's so funny. And he believes that peanut butter can remove the scratches off his CDs. So he's trying to go through his whole collection.
Yeah, it's his pride and joy, his music collection.
Is that true? So he's like rubbing peanut butter into his CDs?
Yeah. I think you could Google it. It might even come up. Yeah. Kind of like the dry rice. Do you hear about that? Like if you drop your iPhone in water and you put it with dry rice.
Oh, it absorbs it. Like people put dry rice in salt as well, mm-hmm. for that reason, right? To keep the salt dry.
So maybe peanut butter actually does remove scratches.
I don't believe it.
Smooth peanut butter, though.
Avoid the chunky.
The chunky would scratch it.
Well, I don't know if jury's out.
So,
otherwise, casting. So Jack Deedy and Aaron Dark and Henry Vick came through Gale. And then Luca, who you can talk about.
Well, that's where I was going to get to. I was holding off. This is an amazing actor, child actor. It's almost like, you know, I don't want to say child actor. But it's so rare when you see somebody that age, mm-hmm. not just playing cute or, actually, she really understands what she's saying and she's a good actor.
I wanted to avoid that, and I even had that conversation with her.
Yeah.
And her parents, you know, because she had such a natural ability. It would be a shame if she did anything more than that. So we had the great pleasure to cast her in a short film of ours where she had no lines. And she really had to convey a lot through subtext. And in that working relationship, we really bonded, the three of us. And that's when I started to, as Quitter was starting to develop into something that would happen, started to get that idea, like, maybe she could play Luca. So before we even went out on breakdown for Luca, we gave her like 12 to 15 pages of sides from the script. And to come in and audition. She came in with them completely memorized.
Yeah.
Ready to go. And, you know, she had some really interesting, engaging choices. She took direction well. She implemented notes. And we didn't even need to see anyone else. I was completely convinced. We said, let's go for it.
How old was she during the shooting?
So she was 7 and 8.
Wow.
Right.
She was 7, almost 8, shooting The Quitter. She was 6 when we worked with her in the short film, and she's 9 now.
She's 8. Got to retire now at 9. Also, while we're on the subject of casting, there is one other great cameo, right? Mm-hmm. Natasha Lyonne, who a lot of people now, if they, of course, knew her for many years of very memorable acting roles, but she's now a star of Orange is the New Black.
Yes.
Like the second or third role in that series. How'd that work out? How'd you get
there? She was another actor that Gail Keller
got
to her reps, and she responded to the scene.
Yeah.
She said yes, like, really fast. And, you know, working with her, She was great.
Yeah.
She was, you know, lovely to work with and had a great sense of humor.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't surprise me on how well she's doing. And, you know, we did stuff that the script called for, and then I just let her loose. And her improv was spectacular.
Yeah.
She is so sharp, and she has this inner monologue going on all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's quick on her feet and was great to work with, you know. And she even, at the end of the day, she wanted to make sure we got everything we needed. She was willing to stay longer. And
right.
Yeah.
Heart's in it.
It was just a great experience working with her.
Yeah, all around, great cast, and it works great. Now, and the movie, again, is called The Quitter, and it's going to have its theatrical premiere in New York, anyway, on Friday, September the 12th. Now, is it any other cities for now, or is it just New York?
Just New York.
Just New York for
and,
now.
And, you right. know, we'll see how it does.
Right, of course.
If it does well, could always get invited to other theater chains or independent theaters like Pounds and a Mexicano.
Right. So are you self-distributing?
We are.
Okay.
We are.
Yeah. But it could still, you could still get a distributor in the sense of, well, other markets, other areas, right? And then also digitally and otherwise. But you can do it.
Yeah, there's some other existing distributors watching what's going to happen the first weekend, but we're not putting stock into that. Basically, our producer, and he also plays the role of Frank, the two guys at the office.
Mm-hmm. The batting. You forgot. I don't think we mentioned that your character.
Yeah, my character owns
a batting cage in Brooklyn. And there's two sort of sidekicks that work there.
Yes, and that was Neil Jane and Joshua Rivera. And Joshua Rivera was in Give Me the Loot.
Oh right, yes.
And Neil Jane has done, you know, TV and a good buddy of mine. Actually, he was the one. He's the reason why I acted in the film. He, when we pitched him the story, he was looking to do a feature film. You know, he said I could find financing for it, and he liked the story a lot. Mm-hmm. And he was like, but you have to act in it. And I was like, I don't act anymore. He's like, forget it. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. And the rest was history.
Huh.
He knew me as an actor many years ago. We met through a mutual friend, Mark Isaacman. And I don't know, you know, maybe he just, he likes to shake things up. And you know what? I'm glad he really did put that challenge out there. It was really an ultimatum.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, because if you're not challenged by something and you're not fearful, it's not going to be fun.
Mm-hmm.
So it added another hat to the directing and producing and all that other stuff. But it was a lot of fun. But anyway, so Neil had gotten the film to one of the top dogs at Regal Cinema,
mm-hmm.
and the rest is history.
So are you talking to whomever about VOD at the moment? Are you, like, pursuing that direction?
We're just focusing on the release right now. We spoke to some distributors.
Uh-huh.
It's a lot better. A couple months ago.
Yeah, okay. Because I see a lot of, films certainly of, it's not a quality issue, so I'm just like, you know what I mean? Because you see, obviously a lot of really, like, flawed films getting distribution.
Right.
Certainly in the digital spheres.
Yeah. I think, you know, our timing was a little off mm-hmm. to secure a VOD to capitalize on the theatrical release.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we're not waiting around for anyone. And, you know, we're just going to move forward. And we have a great publicist team on the film, and they've worked on Silver Linings Playbook and The Beast of the Southern Wild, and they really got this movie.
Yeah. Well, tell me maybe this is after the 23-year trajectory of Pounds. I think it took about 23 years for you to get that out from soup to nuts. No, I'm exaggerating. So it took about 7 years. How long was it? 5 years? I don't remember.
Yeah, it was overall a 10-year journey.
It was a 10-year journey. Mm-hmm. So maybe in reaction to that, you were like, I want this to move, and I want this momentum, and let's ride it out. Because like you said, we spoke about earlier, you intentionally chose not to go through festivals.
Mm-hmm.
So just wondering what went into that. What went into that decision?
I mean, it was a collaboration in the decision with Juliana and Neil and I. And we just didn't want to when our lives dependent on just waiting to get into that right.
Because this is like, I see this, you could see this easily in a South by Southwest or in a Sundance, you know, or what
have
you.
We did a focus group screening last fall.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was eye-opening for us. For filmmakers that don't do focus group screenings, and you could do it really cheaply, and you don't have to hire a bit. You could do it yourselves. And that, for us, was when the public spoke.
And tell me about that.
So in Juliana's hometown, there's a big art house theater, the Colonial Theater, in Phoenixville. And she'll
Is that in New Jersey? Where's that?
The Colonial Theater is in Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. It's near Valley Forge, King of Prussia area. And my mom lives in that town, and my uncle Jack is the unofficial mayor of that town and is a big supporter of the Colonial Theater. We've gone to many events there, and we love this theater, and we've made some relationships. And we approached the head programmer, Mary Foote, who's amazing, and has really made that theater what it is over the last several years, about this film, and asked her if there was any way that we could do a focus group. And she said, this is perfect because I have a group of members who I'm always looking for new things to offer them as perks for being members of the Colonial.
Sure.
And so this was really exciting, and it was something that they hadn't done before, and it was perfect for us to be able to get this film in front of an audience and get their feedback. And I think that, I'll let Matt finish his thought, but I think that what was eye-opening for me about the focus group was that I didn't know that this film had the commercial appeal that it turned out that the focus group said it did. And I think that that kind of changed our distribution strategy right then and there, and we started to think in a different way. You know, Matt's done the festival circuit with his other films, and we've done it with our short films together and really enjoyed every minute, and we'll do it again, absolutely. But this film felt like it needed a different approach. So,
yeah, and we had them fill out anonymously, you know, forms on every aspect of the movie, you know, the acting, the writing, the directing, the editing, the music. If you could imagine what the poster would look like, if you could imagine, you know, similar movies and things like that. And we just really got such specific feedback back that was so helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And like Juliana was saying, was eye-opening.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt like we had something special, even in that rough cut form. It was probably 10 minutes longer than what you've seen, mm-hmm. you know, the theatrical cut. And that's like an eternity, right? That would, mm-hmm. you know, it was a lot of fat. But so just to get, you know, mostly a positive reaction, that, you know, the majority and people admitting they cried and people admitting they laughed and, we were pretty inspired, to say the very least.
Yeah, no, the film is paced well, and it has good, there's a good flow to the emotional through line of it, you know what I mean, where it's paced well in that way.
Great.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
I guess I wonder, like, you know, you always keep hearing about, well, festivals, you can create the buzz and get the reviews,
mm-hmm.
and then there's a momentum built with a buzz created through that, which can carry you through the theatrical. And I appreciate that you intentionally went a different direction, because there are choices out there, you know, and a lot of people don't think along those lines, you know. But as a fourth feature, you know, you've made a number of shorts as well.
Fourth, right.
So, but through this journey, these now you're fourth, making four feature films, you've obviously come to this decision knowing what you're forfeiting and what you're gaining by taking this route, right? So it's all based on an opening night, a theatrical.
Yeah, I mean,
it's
really just based on Friday and Saturday
and
advanced ticket sales. And, you know, we'll see what happens. It's a specialty release, so.
Yeah. Did you weigh into this that you made this so economically responsibly? I'm guessing you did. If you had CG in there, I missed it. But no, I'm saying,
yes.
It seems like you made this really smartly. And it looks like $1 million, so don't get me wrong. But, and it sounds great. But
let that sound.
But, you know, yeah. But it's shot with, there's, you know, you kind of went the Ed Burns route. Mm-hmm. A couple of movies back when he was doing that, it seems like casting friends and family and actors that are, will work within a, you know, a reasonable payday and all that. And so you're willing to experiment with, let's try different ways. Let's really, you know, do this the way that works for us.
Yeah.
And now you can explore the VOD, explore putting it out digitally the way it works for you.
Yeah, the industry is changing so much. So it's, again, it's a new journey for us. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was even different before we started filming. So it actually, like, the industry changed in the last 2 years.
Right.
With films getting distribution deals and VOD deals. And so we're just monitoring everything and just educating ourselves every day as much as possible.
Speaking on working within a limited budget, I think that that also comes from the experience of making the other films and working really hard, wearing those many hats. You know, Matthew was able to pull off directing, producing, acting, and I produced and acted, and we had a lot of other people who worked really hard and wore multiple hats to make it happen, too. And mm-hmm. I think that that shows sometimes in a good way, because all this passion comes together in the film, and it kind of makes everyone closer.
I guess that's the indie spirit.
Yeah.
You know, that's what it's about. I mean, it'll sound cliche what I'm going to say, but we really do try to have positive energy on our sets, like a harmonious environment for the actors and for the crew. And if there's one bad apple, we get rid of it. But for the most part, people really enjoy our sets. And, you know, of course, you're on a movie set and things could get tense, but there are worse things happening out there. And we're making a movie. We have a great opportunity. And if everyone just puts the film above themselves, and,
right.
and that's the big picture.
Yeah.
It's not about the director or the actor or the, you know, it's about all of us. We're all part of making this movie, and everyone's going to contribute something special. And there's no small actors and there's no small crew members. I mean, it's just everyone is important piece to the puzzle.
Links of a chain.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what we really strive for, right?
Yes.
So and then I guess you'll be at the Ewok Hall of Fame. No, the Regal Cinema
Ewok.
Cineplex Ewok 25.
No,
13.
Times Square.
Julie, say it again.
Regal Ewok Cinemas in Times Square.
Okay, in Times Square, Friday, September 12th.
Yes.
You guys will be there for Q&As, or how's
yes,
it working?
Yes, Q&As.
Friday, Saturday?
September 12th, after the 7 p.m. screening. And Saturday, the 13th, after the 7 p.m. screening. Two Q&As, come on out and check out the Quitter.
Any of the other folks coming from the film?
Yes. Neil Jane will be there. Dan Grimaldi will be there. Bill Gullo will be there.
Jack O'Connell will be there.
Oh, terrific.
Destiny Monet Cruz will be there.
And many more.
Okay, and I'll work on getting Natasha there. Okay, well, guys, let's do this more frequently.
Absolutely.
You know,
thank you for having
it's
us.
It's shocking.
Thank you.
Thank you. So I've been doing this 3-4 years, and it's shocking. I've come on before. Well, I'll get over it. Thank you, guys. Okay, well, thanks for listening, everybody. That was my friends Matthew and Juliana, and again, the film is we'll be playing New York the 12th of September. This is your host, Adam Shartoff. You've been listening to Filmwax Radio, episode number 238, and we'll be back, of course, very shortly. You've been listening to Filmwax Radio, presented by Rooftop Films. Until next time, take care. True.